also running unusually warm. By the National Climatic Data Center's measure, this will have been the 38th consecutive August and 354th consecutive month with a global average temperature above the 20th century average, a mark of how ever-rising greenhouse gas levels in the atmosphere are warming the planet. The New York Times reports, the development of safer pesticides and legal restrictions on their use have sharply reduced the risk to humans from pesticide-tainted rivers and streams, while the potential risk to aquatic life in urban waters has risen, according to a two-decade survey published over a week ago. The study, conducted by the United States Geological Survey and published in the journal Environmental Science and Technology, monitored scores of pesticides from 1992 to 2011 at more than 200 sampling points on rivers and streams. In both of the last two decades, researchers reported that they found insecticides and herbicides in virtually all of the waterways. The results nevertheless documented a striking decline in dangers to humans from pesticide pollution. From 1992 to 2001, 17% of agricultural streams and 5% of other streams contained at least one pesticide whose average annual concentration was above the maximum contaminant level for drinking water. But in the second decade, from 2002 to 2011, the survey found dangerous pesticide concentrations in only one stream nationwide. Quote, "It's very clear in the data that regulatory changes in use do affect what you see in the streams," said Wes Stone, a hydrologist with the Geological Survey in Indianapolis. "It's showing what you would expect, and that's good," end quote. The use of insecticides dropped about one-third in the 1990s, mostly because of changes forced by regulatory actions, and remained more or less constant during the first decade of the 2000s. The opposite was true for herbicides, whose use was steady during the 1990s, but then rocketed as the weed killer glyphosate became popular on farms and gardens. Notably, the Geological Survey study did not monitor some of the most widely pesticides like glyphosate, commonly known by the brand name Roundup. According to the USA Today, more than 300,000 people marched through the streets of New York City on Sunday in what organizers called the largest climate change demonstration in history. With banners, flags, floats, and drums, protesters at the People's Climate March overwhelmed Midtown Manhattan in flocks of vivid color, demanding action ahead of the United Nations Climate Summit this week. Protesters chanted, "What do we want? Justice. When do we want it? Now." And they carried signs with messages that read, "Go solar. You control climate change, and there is no planet B." The march is the first in a series of events held around the world this week to shine a spotlight on global warming ahead of the UN summit on Tuesday. President Obama and world leaders from government, finance, and business will be at the UN to announce initiatives meant to move the world toward limiting global warming. This year's Climate Week events follow a series of scientific reports from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change that conclude global warming is unequivocal and that it is extremely likely that human activity has been the dominant cause since the mid-20th century. On the streets of New York on Sunday, the marchers were led by indigenous groups from around the world. Organizers say many of these indigenous people are often the first victims of climate change. I think we've got Mike on the line.
Hello.
Mike, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
We can.
Oh, great.
Hi. So you're up in New York.
Well, I've left New York. I'm almost close to halfway back to Kansas City. I'm in Ohio, somewhere around Kent State, somewhere between Youngstown and Akron. So I left this morning, and I'm still basking in the afterglow, and it was an amazing experience to be a part of. It was just a delight to be around so many kindred spirits. It was a delight to be in the energy of the city. The first thing that really struck me about this was that made me really, really happy was like this was, in terms of multiculturalism, mm-hmm. this really was it. I mean, there was so many different types of people there from all over the world, from all over the country, from all over the city. And people were divided into like blocks of marchers, and so the people that opened up the parade were the indigenous people, mm-hmm. First Nations from around the world, and so quite a consortium of different folks from different tribal identities from around the world, and it was very, as Amy Goodman pointed out, it was quite a bit of poetic justice that they got to start this off, and they were there right at Columbus Circle, right at the statue of Christopher Columbus.
Wow.
So that was pretty exciting. And it was really good that those folks were the folks that got this started off. And I know Sting marched with them, but mostly it was like tribal leaders, and it was a pretty powerful thing.
That's beautiful.
Right behind them was the Interfaith Organization, and Moti Reber from Kansas City of Interfaith Power and Light. He's been on our program many times. He, I think, marched with them. And that, again, Interfaith shows another commitment to diversity and multiculturalism. So there was just a lot. I mean, there were yoga people for climate change, and there were Tibetans, and there were, to my surprise, there were a large number of communists, people wearing communist party shirts. And to my surprise, it speaks to my own stereotyping or whatever, but I'm going to say at least 80% of them were African American.
Mm-hmm.
There were a strong Latino presence. There was a strong Canadian presence. People from South America and from Asia and from all over the country. It was quite a thing. So, for those of you who aren't familiar with New York, this started at the southwest corner of Central Park, along the street that runs parallel, is called Central Park West. So it started right there. That's where the native folks were lined up. And there were people lined up to march all the way going back to 86th Street.
Wow.
And I never made it back to the end. I went back. I worked my way back, and I ran into Richard, I know you know Zay Thompson. He was a guest on on Eco Radio before. I ran into him there.
Okay.
He was wearing a Lorax mask. And I ran into John Kerman and his wife Rockney. And I ran into a former Kansas Cityan by the name of Adam Young, who was a Green Party candidate for Congress out of the St. Joe area about 10 years ago. He's now living in Philadelphia. And so I just ran into a lot of different people. And even though I didn't know, were kind of like my friends. They were all everyone was so cool to each other and very friendly. And it was a very powerful thing. I got back as far as like 75th Street and saw that like there was some kind of rally about to start. And this looked like a youth area. It was this area was mostly led by youth. But there were a couple interesting speakers. I want to try and share this with you now. The first speaker we're going to hear is Representative Keith Ellison. He's out of the
Minnesota.
Twin Cities area in Minnesota.
Right.
He's co-chair of the Progressive Caucus. And let's hear from him, if I can do this right.
Hello, everyone. Now, Representative Keith Ellison. The Progressive Caucus on Congress, and he is going to talk to us. He is a champion on environmental issues, and he's going to give us a couple of minutes.
Oh, beautiful, for spacious skies, for amber waves of green, for purple mountain majesty above the fruited plain. I want you to think about the words to that patriotic song. And ask yourself how we can have purple mountain majesty if these people are cutting the top off of the mountain. I want you to ask yourself, how are we going to have spacious skies if these coal plants are spitting junk into the air, coming down on us in the form of particulate matter? I want you to think about this song, and I want you to feel love for this nation of ours, because this is our country, this is our world. And I want you to commit yourself from this day and every day forward to save the purple mountain majesty, the amber waves of gray, the spacious mountains all above us for yourself and for your family. People often say we gotta speak truth to power, and we do. We must confront the fossil fuel industry. But we got to speak truth to each other. And we've got to speak the truth to each other and tell each other that if we work together, all colors, all cultures, and all faiths, if we work together, if we work together, we can change this thing. cynicism, no. Optimism, yes. If we join together, we will win. Let's go save a plan, everybody. Right now. Come on now.
All right, so that was Keith Ellison, and of course he got was very much appreciated. There was a lot of other local luminaries there. I know Bobby Kennedy Jr. was down there. He was talking to Amy Goodman, and it's like just about a year ago, almost to the day that Bobby Kennedy was in Kansas City at the confluence of the Kaw and Missouri rivers.
Hey, Mike. Mike.
Yeah.
Help me understand what you're looking at when you're talking. So you're out there walking, and then you talk about Kennedy being with Amy Goodman. Was there a stage set up somewhere where they had people speaking, just like the Ellison guy that just spoke?
This was before the march started.
Okay.
This was like everyone was lined up on the street, and they had a straight, you know, so people were there. Assembled for a couple hours, especially towards the back of the march, before they even started marching. So they actually had a stage in the street, which they had to move out of the way. And so that's where Keith Ellison was.
Okay,
Amy Goodman was doing a live broadcast and played a lot of it this morning on Democracy Now! She was more by Columbus Circle, so it wasn't a stage. They just had a table or a booth, and they just had a parade of people coming by, you know, from all over. It was quite a parade of people. Bobby Kennedy and Mary Robinson, former president of Ireland, and Juan Gonzalez, and so many others.
Okay.
So what I'm playing for you is like before the march even started. And so once the march, and the thing was so big and so daunting, I mean, I've heard... I saw actually one report today that said 400,000.
Yeah.
So the people who were at the front, they were finished with the march hours before the people at the back. Like, it was, you know, it was that kind of big, unwieldy thing. And so towards the end, I thought it was going to kind of be anticlimactic, that it would just fizzle out. And it kept... when we got to the end, we were greeted, by the time when I got there, Peter Yarrow from Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Right, I saw him. Saw him out there singing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had some shots. Yeah. They've been showing shots all day long. At least they have on MSNBC. I'm not for sure about the other channels. I heard that there's been a lack of news coverage about what was going on. But I did get to see one where he was out there leading some folk songs.
Right.
Mike, I gotta ask you this. You know, I've been reporting the news on our Eco Radio for several months now, and a lot of the news that I have to share is gloomy, not good news, you know. But when I was researching about this People's Climate March, it was just so uplifting. I could feel the energy, you know, coming from my computer screen. I just want to read you this quote from the NewYorkTimes.com that I found. It says, quote, "The diversity of the demonstrators made for some odd juxtapositions. On West 58th Street, the minaret of an inflatable mosque bobbed next to a wooden replica of Noah's Ark the size of a school bus. Nearby, Franciscan monks in flowing brown robes who were in town from Rome from the march, mingled with nuns while a group flying a pagan flag beat a drum," end quote. And I just find that so exciting. It just shows how different we all are, yet we all share the same earth. We all need this earth to live if we want to live. And, Mike, you spoke about some of that diversity that you experienced earlier in the show. And tell me about how you think the diversity that was there just speaks to the power behind this movement. I mean, do you really think that we can bring about this change that we need our leaders to take the reins on?
Well, I mean, this truly does. I mean, this really, like, you know, underscored the whole sense that we're all in the same boat. We're all breathing the same air. And so we've all got that common interest. We might come from a lot of different backgrounds and might even squabble with other folks over certain issues, but here's, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, as daunting as this climate thing is, it's a huge chance for the whole planet to come together
right.
and really make something great. And the fact that it was done on the UN's, you know, International Peace Day
mm-hmm.
was, I think, spoke to that as well. And, you know, speaking of peace, it was very peaceful. There were no problems. There were no, you know, no problems at all. So there were all kinds of cultures. I mean, you can slice and dice that. You could say religious, different religious backgrounds, different ethnic backgrounds, different racial backgrounds, different countries or whatever. But it was all of that. But it was also like there was a block of scientists
mm-hmm.
who marched together. There were a block of students. There were a block of, you know, union folks, you know.
Right. I saw a photo of a group of people holding a big sign, and half of it talked about, you know, loving Mother Earth, and the other half of the same sign was talking about protect Gaza region. And
right. There was a lot of people who were there for Palestinian rights as well. Yeah. The Palestinian people were there in big numbers, for sure.
And
that was rather exciting. And it was just a chance, you know, it's just great to see people, you know, walking down the street. I think of that great utopian line from the Grateful Dead, people stopping strangers just to shake their hand.
Mm-hmm.
That's what was going on. I mean, and it was a really wonderful, wonderful march. And I was exhausted when it was over, and I was, like, not ready to go,
mm-hmm.
other than the fact that I was tired. So it was great. And I ran into Amy Goodman and Dennis Moynihan at the end, and got to see them as well. And it was exciting. Let me play you one more clip, and then maybe Jen can get John Carmen on the
let,
line.
Let
so
me
let
ask
me play
you,
this one clip.
Before, Mike.
Yeah.
Before you play that, let me read you one more quote and get a question. Ask you a question, all right?
Okay,
here's the quote.
All right.
From New York Times, quote, "The climax of the march came in the early afternoon. All along the route, crowds had been quieted for a moment of silence. On Avenue of the Americas at 57th Street, there was an eerie silence as marchers raised their arms and looked down. Then at exactly 1 p.m., a whistle pierced the silence, setting off a minute-long cacophony intended as a collective alarm on climate change. There were the beats of the drums and the blaring of horns, but mostly it was whoops and cries of the marchers," end quote. Mike, were you there at this moment of silence and then the eruption of sound? Were you there?
I was there. I experienced the moment of silence and the eruption of sound, but not at 57th Street. I mean, we hadn't even begun marching when that happened. And so, yes, this moment of silence happened, and everyone got real quiet. It took a couple people, you know, a few seconds to get the hint, you know,
mm-hmm.
but people got really, really quiet. And then it was like a wave of sound coming north on Central Park West. You know, it was like an audio version of the wave,
right.
you know, where you could hear it coming down the street. And then you could hear it going back down the other way
when it was done.
And so, yeah, it was like they were calling it a wake-up call, or they were also calling it like a burglar alarm that, you know, someone's stealing our planet.
Mm-hmm.
We're, you know, sounding off the alarm.
Mike,
So, yeah, that was one of the most poignant moments.
I saw a clip on it, just a real quick clip, and I could hear the sound like a wave, just like you described. I'm like, man, I got the chills just watching it on my computer. I was like, if Mike was there, that had to just be amazing. Okay, let's hear what you got for us, Mike, that clip.
Okay. All right, let me get this next clip queued up. Let me see where I am here. All right, here we go.
There are marches going on in Amsterdam, Istanbul, Paris, London, Berlin, Brandenburg, and Edinburgh. That's really exciting. This is not just us here. What an announcement. Can I have everyone on the sidewalk please move over to the road? You can't march there. So everyone please move over to the road. Great, and while they're doing that, let's do one more chant. Who remembers the Who's Air, Our Air chant? You all remember that right now? All right, so let's do that. I'm going to say Who's Air, and you're going to say Our Air, and I'm going to say Who's future, and they're going to say our future. You're just going to follow me. Ready? Who's there?
Our future.
Who's future?
Our future.
Who's health? Who's faith? Who's air? Who's future? Who's
house?
Who's street? Awesome, everyone. So now I'd like to introduce Professor Jeffrey Sachs. If you can come up on stage. He is a leading global expert on poverty reduction and a clear voice on connection between climate and prosperity. He's also the executive director of my graduate program, Columbia University's Earth Institute. So give it up for Jeffrey Sachs, everyone.
Let's hear it for Columbia. And what a beautiful view it is, as far as the eye can see in both directions. Millions of people around the world, hundreds of thousands of people in New York City are saying today, we've had enough. We start winning today. The truth is, we are not winning yet. This August was the hottest August in human history. Last year was the greatest emissions of greenhouse gases in history. We are not yet turning the curve, but we're here because we outnumber ExxonMobil. We outvote ExxonMobil. We outpower ExxonMobil, and they better get in line, because there is no license to wreck the planet. I just want to share four ideas for the scorecard of the critical months ahead. Four ideas. One, we're drawing the line. The world has said no warming beyond 2 degrees Celsius. We cannot go beyond that without wrecking the planet. We are holding the line. Second, decarbonization. This is the essence of everything that we're after. Get carbon out of the energy system and get it out in time. Third, pathways. Every country has to show the path to decarbonization. What is the U.S. path? It doesn't exist. What is this administration's policy? All of the above. That's not a policy, ladies and gentlemen. That's a lobbyist's dream. We don't want any more lobbyist dreams. We want a pathway to decarbonization. And the fourth idea is COP21, the agreement in Paris next year. We're going to hold all politicians accountable. It's not just today. It's every day. Between now and Paris, December 2015, we're not supporting any politicians that go for Keystone Pipeline, that have refused to put forward paths of decarbonization. They are on notice today. Today we start winning. Thank you very much for all being together.
All right, I hope that came through okay.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, that's good.
All right, and do we have John on the line?
I want to see, John, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine, fellow. So you want to tell us a little bit about your experience, and then you and Mike can probably kick it back and forth with each other.
Sure, I'd be happy to. It's just to give you an update on where we are. We just left St. Charles maybe 10 minutes ago, dropping off folks we picked up there. We're on the charter bus headed back to Columbia. In Kansas City, Lawrence, and Wichita, dropping people off at each of those stops. So we're pretty worn from the journey, that's for sure. But it was a truly, truly incredible experience to be part of this thing, and to have gotten the word that it was so much bigger than what the organizers had projected, what they were expecting it to be, and bigger even than I imagined it would be. So it was truly amazing. So we got in to New York City, to Manhattan, at about 9:30 yesterday morning. Hopped off the bus and headed over to Central Park West. And I was planning to march with the Tarzan flock because that's the issue, a particular climate issue I spent the most time working on. So we found the Tarzan flock there between 80 and 80th and 81st, and I quickly got drafted to help out with some street performance theater, a group called Bread and Puppets, and I can't remember right now where they're based, but they were doing street theater based on the concept of the tar sands threatening the caribou. So they had people dressed as caribou at the front of the line, the front of their group, and then there was a tar sands monster behind them, and behind those were skeletons that were labeled with the names of the corporations that are profiting from tar sands exploitation. And so the corporate monster was behind the tar sands monster. So we went through this street theater where the tar sands encircled the caribou and the caribou collapsed to the ground. And then just when it looked like all was lost and the corporate skeletons were laughing over their profits, the bugle call sounded with the cavalry coming in. And we struck down the corporate monster, and the butterflies were let loose running through the streets, and it was pretty cool to be a part of that. And just to be a part of, I'd never been to New York City, so that alone was an amazing experience, but to be there, not just as a tourist, but to be there to be part of something bigger than has ever been on the climate, and something bigger than has been on anything related to saving the world, and maybe since the first Earth Day when 20 million people, it's estimated, came out nationwide. So it really does feel like this is a movement that is building to the point where it could have the strength to finally begin to bend the course that we're on to a sustainable course. So it was just amazing.
John, by any chance, did you run into Yvonne from down in Wichita?
Yeah, Yvonne was part of our group. We have a bus charter.
So she's on that bus with you?
She's not on the bus. We overfilled the bus.
Right.
We chartered one bus and overfilled it, and then Yvonne got a couple of vans that are trailing us. Yeah,
okay.
They're trailing us. So they're part of our group.
All right. Mike, I'm on the mic. Where are you? I mean, John's on the bus. Where are you, Mike?
I'm at a rest stop in Ohio.
Okay. All right. I was wondering how you were able to do what you were doing. Okay. So now we've had this march, and we're getting ready for our time. We got a couple of minutes left here, gang. Sorry, I can't extend it past that. Where do we go from here? Each of you to give me about a minute apiece on where you think we're going from here. I know I'm putting you in a tough spot, but just so we'll have something to walk away with.
Well, let John speak first.
Okay, thanks, Mike. So there are, of course, the individual projects that we need to keep fighting. We need to put a stake through the heart of the Keystone XL pipeline once and for all, end this uncertainty, stamp it down. We have to keep pushing hard for the clean power plan proposed by the EPA to limit emissions from power plants to be as strong as is possible, even stronger than what the EPA initially proposed. Those are the kinds of national scale things. And the Keystone XL is just one of multiple tar sands pipelines proposals that have to be killed and killed once and for all. There's these plans to export more and more coal. That has to be stopped. Plans to export liquefied natural gas to other parts of the world, that has to be stopped. We have to keep the pressure on building up to the December 2015 talks, climate summit in Paris, because we really have to have a global agreement, a global binding agreement to reduce emissions together if we're going to get this situation under control and preserve a livable climate.
Okay. Mike, help me out there.
Yeah, I mean, it is a hard question to ask. I mean, when you say where do we go, do you mean like individually? What should we be doing?
If individual is the attack that you want to speak to, I say yes, because we have group, we have individual. So individual what?
Yeah, well, I mean, people really, I mean, need to be conscious of their carbon consumption.
Okay.
And need to find ways to mitigate that. And you know, we've heard great things. You know, there's great things going on, you know, in Kansas City and all around the country with was working on that. Like, we talked to Jenny O'Brien from Klemahop. She's working on reducing the number of cars on the road. We need to, like, be more community-oriented and ground-oriented and learn to build off of these, you know, these connections. And we need to continue to connect the dots. And that's what was, like, the success of this thing, is that so many different groups, like, came together. It wasn't all environmental groups. Like, Move to Amends had a group was marching there. And, you know, we need to all come together around this issue, because this is an issue that can really bring us together as a species like no other can.
Okay, Eugene, we really appreciate you. Be safe, be careful on your way home, and we look forward to seeing you when you get here. Thanks a lot.
Just let listeners know, tomorrow morning on Law and Disorder, they're going to have some highlights from the march as well. That's at 9 o'clock after Democracy Now.
Okay, buddy. All right, y'all take care.
Hey, thanks, Mike.
Yeah.
Okay, bye. We're going to take a break, gang, and then we'll get back here with our guests. Thank you.
Support for 90.1 FM KKFI provided by Paul Grahovic and Quindaro Gardens Mutual Aid Society. You can Google them or UMKC Communiversity to find out about moving to an urban farmstead neighborhood with a giant group garden.
Wednesday was an historic day.
It was?
Hey, this is your old pal Mike Murphy. You know, I was born on Wednesday, and I'm here to tell you that this Wednesday's child is full of whoa. So join me each and every Wednesday morning until 8 a.m. for music from around the world and around the block. Your Wednesday morning buzz. Going 10 years strong.
The wonder of it all, baby.
On Wednesday, all the malls across America connected.
Did you know that the Kansas River is 170 miles long and provides recreation and drinking water to many in our area? Friends of the Kaw work full-time to protect this natural resource. They will be holding a benefit catfish fry at Abe and Jake's Landing on the river in Lawrence on Thursday, September 25th. More information available at kansasriver.org. This message, a public service of 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
Okay, gang. That was very interesting. I mean, I'm glad that we had a chance to share in that experience with Mike and John. It feels like we were there. Let's try to concentrate back on what we're doing back in the city. I had a couple of things I wanted to add in there today. Did you know that we set a Guinness World Record out there in California on Saturday? With the by having a parade of electric vehicles, we had a total of 507, beating a record that was previously held by Stuttgart, Germany, by 26 cars. And the electric vehicles had to have zero emission, all electric. No hybrid vehicles were allowed. So that, I guess you can say that's an honor. I mean, can you see 500 and some vehicles in a parade going down the road? Where else but California? And then they had a little list to go along with that about the prices of the cars, because I was concerned about if you got 500 and some cars, what are they doing with them as far as price-wise? And without going into a lot of detail about names of what the cars are, some of them I can't pronounce anyhow, they range from about $17,500, what I thought was very reasonable, up to BMW for $135,000. So, you know, you have a wide range of vehicles that are available, and you also have a motorcycle for $10,000. That's not bad, because regular motorcycles, you can get a Harley Davidson, run you about $22,000 when you get it all fixed up and everything. So being able to get a electric motorcycle for $10,000, not bad. I like the fact that this is going on, because it's a way to prepare our future for our kids. So that information is always good. Also, Mike sent out his weekly report on the gleaning. You know, I was out at Joe Jennings Farm over in Kansas City, Kansas, on 4600 Sartor Drive. And that's what he pretty much does right now when the folks in town, they come out with the people and they glean you and help pick your goods. So I got a deal on here. We done missed Monday, Tuesday. They're picking pears in Oak Grove, Missouri. They need six people to do that. On Wednesday, they're doing Kansas City, Kansas again, picking apples. Need 10 people and the drivers to help transport that. Wednesday also, they picking tomatoes in Lone Jack, Missouri. Needed about 10 more people for that. Folks, I'm not going to give a lot of details on this because the people out there who are already involved will know what I'm talking about. And so they pretty much know how to handle all this. And then Thursday and Friday, they have a mystery gleaning in Kansas City metro area. If you or any other gleanings get rained out, we will return to finish up a job. And then Saturday on the 27th, they need a field supervisor in Kansas City. So just wanted to make sure that we touched bases with that before we got into our program. You know, right before Mike left, he said something that I think was very important when he said we got to figure out a way to make these climate change efforts community-based. And the guy I have sitting in here with me right now is a person who I'm very, very much fond of, because I've seen him make up his mind he wanted to do something, came into the Kansas City area, met yours truly, of course, and has gone from that to what I think has the potential of being a prototype that can be used all over this country, even the world. Paul, I want you to introduce yourself and just kind of briefly just give a little history here about this.
Sure. I'm Paul Grahovac. I founded a group called Quindaro Gardens Mutual Aid Society. I'm a corporate attorney and business development executive for a construction products company. About 5 years ago, I started asking questions about how I might get involved more in the Quindaro area of Kansas City, Kansas, where I'd been volunteering every Saturday for 3 years for Habitat building houses. And people put me on to Mr. Richard Mabian. He put me on to Mr. Isaac Jefferson, who has since passed, and ended up volunteering every Saturday for 2 years for the Oak Grove Neighborhood Association and the Jefferson family growing vegetables on vacant lots, which is what I had sought to do when I sought out Richard. And then 3 years ago, I purchased a small house at the Wyandotte County tax sale for $1,400 and qualified to buy some vacant lots near it, and bought 5 vacant lots. And for the last 3 years, I've been growing vegetables in accordance with organic principles by my transplants or seedlings from Cultivate KC. And it's a free picking garden. And the idea was to build it, and they will come, and do have people come and do free picking, and starting to have some people helping out with growing the food. And now I'm branching off a little bit and adding to the focus by encouraging people to move into the neighborhood. I've decided to retire there myself, move into the neighborhood, and use that giant garden as a focal point to reduce their costs and hopefully increase their quality of life.
I like I said, I just admire what you're doing. I think there is a lot of potential in this. I go by to see Paul from time to time, and it seems like every time I go by there, something interesting happens that just is a memorable, makes it a memorable stop. I'm taking my grandbabies by there so they can pick something out of the garden. I mean, I want them to always be exposed when they're in town in the summer to those kind of operations. And I went by one time, and he had the Catholic Youth organization out there.
Youth Volunteer Corps of America.
Yes, and they were helping him put in his soaker system, you know. And I couldn't
figure out how to do it, so I just dumped it in a pile and they did it.
They did it. I mean, you know, and so he has really put forth the effort. And then his son. Tell us about your son. Come on. He graduated from school.
Yeah, my son's 26 years old and has been out in Portland, Oregon for quite a while and decided he'd like to come back to this area. And I got very interested in the project, and I needed to rehab the house to keep it off the demolition list. And I needed someone to live in it after rehabbing it. So he has a construction background, as I do. So we rehab the house. He's living there with his significant other, Crystal. And they have quite a time of it now, not only working in the garden, but getting most of their food requirements from it and coming up with very innovative ways to cook. She's quite the chef, I guess.
Okay.
And also teaching themselves quite a bit about food preservation.
Okay. Now, you know me. I'm a person that feels that we need visual examples of what the people in New York are talking about we need to start doing. We need it for our low-income communities to have something that they can actually visualize, see, to be able to connect the dots when they're in school about various things that it's going to be a benefit for them in life. And that's what that lot Paul has. I mean, he is down deep into the hood, folks. I'm going to tell you that right now. He's deep into the hood. In fact, the street ends right where his house is. And I was there one time and was just getting ready to leave. And I was taking pictures because he got all these lots around there. And I'm trying to always take pictures of anything that I do. And this lady drives up wanting to know, why am I taking pictures? Because, you know, some neighborhoods, folks don't really like folks that look like they don't belong there taking pictures. Now, Paul's white and his son. White, so now, so you know, he's already got it standing out over there. And then here I come in there looking like I don't really need to be in this neighborhood. So it was really an experience when she stopped and asked me, and then she wanted to know, where was this fella that had the garden? And I went, well, that's where he stays, and there's the garden. She wanted him because she had heard that he had a tiller or something like that. In other words, he became a resource, and you could see that by doing what he was doing. You had brought a resource to that neighborhood in the years that you've been there. I'm just totally impressed.
I've been going to the neighborhood association meetings. It's a Parkwood Colony neighborhood within right. The Quindaro area. And I have to say those ladies there have been very warm and supportive. Unfortunately, to an extent, they have their own gardens and right. always have had and always will. But they have come and helped quite a bit and helped me get the word out. But everyone in the neighborhood has been very open and warm, and again, I'm planning to retire there and encouraging other people to think about it.
Well, I think it's great. I think it's a great addition to our community, and I'm very honored to be a part of it and do what I can to benefit you in the things you're doing. Now you got a class coming up this Saturday. Tell us about that.
Yeah, to help get the word out, I contacted the UMKC Communiversity Group. I've taken a course or two there over the years. Mm-hmm. And suggested that I teach a one-time, two-hour class this coming Saturday at the project site. And it'll basically be very unstructured. And basically tour the people around the site, tell them how I put it together, some of the techniques I learned from Cultivate KC, to minimize water consumption, and, of course, it's all done in accordance with organic principles, no chemical.
Right.
And also talk a little bit about the lots that are available for purchase, for building, for having gardens, and many homes that are there that are actually in quite good shape. There's one there in particular I'm showing to people. If it was out in Johnson County, it'd easily be $100,000. I've been in it. It's very nice for $21,000.
Yeah.
So it's
unbelievable.
Yeah. And I have my professional work. I'm part of the building science community and the green building movement, and have quite a reserve of knowledge about how to rehab a house to dramatically reduce the energy cost. Anytime you got to do a re-siding or a window retrofit, you have tremendous opportunity to do energy savings, but if you just do it with the people that are not associated with green building, you're not going to be able to realize those benefits. So I'm going to talk a little bit about that.
Right. Well, I noticed that you are LEED certified. I saw
that's right.
that in your
yeah.
paper. And there's something about you've found someone who has the knowledge of building affordable housing or something like that?
Well, there's a movement across the United States called the Passive House Movement.
Okay.
And they're motto is heat it with a hairdryer. And I thought they were kidding, but they're really not very much. They say if you have a passive house in the coldest day of the winter in a northern climate and you throw a party that night, you're probably going to have to turn off the furnace and open the windows because the body heat will run you out. They cut the air leakage way down.
Okay.
They use a very thick insulation. And there's a builder in town, I believe it's Prairie Design is the name, David Schleicher, okay. who is Passive House certified as a builder and a consultant.
That's called Passive House?
Uh-huh, Passive House, PHIUS.org, I think will get you there.
Okay.
And I know him from my professional work, and I told him what I was doing and what I had in mind, and it turned out that his partner, another David there, basically wrote up his master's thesis in building science and community development along a similar model.
Right.
And it's something they talk about often. And I said, you know, I'd like to use you as a resource for people that are interested in building a passive house, trying to figure out a way to do it as low cost as possible. I said, of course, the lower the cost, the less money you make. And he said, well, I'm trying to get the word out about Passive House, so I want to be part of it. So.
Yeah, well, I'm really glad to hear that because that feeds into our the work that we're doing as far as create education opportunities and programs for people to learn. I'm still a person that believes that the total movement, environmental movement, is still in the education phase.
He sits on the board, by the way, at the Kansas Community College relative to construction, so he's getting the word out there.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I think that everything, even like what you're doing, stuff that I'm doing, the people that are out there in the field doing the work, are actually creating a visual educational opportunity for others to learn, because that's where we are now. Someday I visualize the type of lot that you have going over there, being all over town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's
there's no reason
sure.
this couldn't be cookie cuttered all over the city and all over the country.
Yeah, no problem, no doubt with it in my mind. Let's see. Saturday I'm gonna try to be over there. I have a project going at Big 11 Lake. For those of you out there who are in that Big 11 Lake area, they'll be over there Saturday cleaning it up, the annual cleanup that Wyandotte High School does with Green Builders Unit out of Johnson County Community College.
Okay.
They come down and help them over there. That's their community project.
Green Day, I believe they call it.
Yeah. That's
Green Apple Day or
something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it. Well, they're going to be there doing that. I'm going to get over and hang out with them, I think, from about 8 to 10. Then I'm going to swoop over to yours because your program starts at 10, right?
Right. Love to have you.
Yeah, I may be a few minutes late, but I'm going to be running in there, you know, because I want to come over and stand by you in some solidarity.
Yep. Yeah, I want to show the neighbor. I'm going to encourage the ladies from the Home Association to come because I'd like to show a group. Yeah,
that's good. Well, God wish you good luck on it. Well, pal, I think I've kind of got here. Anything you'd like to add in here? I mean, to tap off what we're doing. I know that I heard you say, I also have to mention that he understands what you have to do in a urban environment to build a program. And one thing you have to do is attend meetings. You have to attend meetings. They're always at night. They're always from 6 to 7 o'clock getting started. And Paul has done that. I run into him. I walk in a meeting, and there he is. I mean, we've been to the NAACP. We've been to the different meetings. And I think that's very important to be able to develop that relationship with those people who live in the neighborhood. So many of us, as we were saying right out there in the green room, many of our environmental programs are being provided to the particular portion of the population that they're working with, but it bypasses the community itself. So the program's going on, and the community's totally clueless on what's going on. And so people like us, we have to make sure we're in a position that we can connect them dots.
I was just, during the climate change piece, I was thinking a little bit about the relationship to the local food market movement. And, of course, California is... You used to say it's losing its water, and seems like it's pretty much lost its water. And of course, that's where a lot of our produce comes from. And so you're likely to see more and more of this local food market, and it makes you feel rather fortunate that we're situated we're at the confluence of two important rivers.
Right.
So we might have some water for a while. I guess I would just cap my piece of it by saying that this project ought to appeal to three types of people: retirees, or people nearing that age who are not going to be able to stay in their suburban homes at retirement because of the cost and the mortgage, people who rely on employment with companies they don't own and are subject to unemployment. This provides a way to make a big dent in that food bill. And then people who are not satisfied with their level of income, interested in reducing their expenses, but not reducing their consumption necessarily, actually getting a higher quality of food, and then having more disposable cash to spend.
I think that hits it right on, and that's exactly what we're dealing with in our neighborhoods. There is so much need for what you are doing. The Sierra Club, working with in conjunction with me, we've been able to get inside the homes of a lot of the elderly folks that live there in Wyandotte County and Quindaro and just the whole county, and for some low-hanging fruit-type project, you know, you was talking about the guy that can seal up the house in such a way, if you had a party, you'd have to open up the doors, it'd be too hot in there. And I was thinking of all those homes over
Absolutely.
There in Wyandotte County that are old and have those air leaks, and how, boy, if there was a concerted effort to mm-hmm. go in and just, if nothing else, shore up those leaks, you mm-hmm. know, if you could.
You take a caulk gun and get a caulk gun and $35 laser thermometer
yes.
from Home Depot, and
yes.
you sit on your couch on a windy day when it's cold, and you can see where it's coming in and
yeah.
go caulk it. Yeah.
We got that when we used to go around to the houses, and I would show people in neighborhood meetings which we used to see where the air was coming from, and that price you had, like $35, was a good one, because normally they were selling like $500,000 to $600,000 and stuff. Yeah. All right, gang. Well, Paul, thanks a lot. I appreciate you coming in.
Yes,
I mean, anytime. We want to keep up with you. I'm going to keep up with you.
Please do.
Because it was kind of ironic. I came in, and Mike had this. And he said, Richard, we need somebody to fill in. I can do this thing out of town, and we have to have someone. Do you think you could contact this person? I looked at him. This is my guy. What are you talking about? No
Absolutely.
Problem.
Absolutely.
All right, gang. We appreciate you calling. I mean, come tuning us in, and we hope you enjoyed hearing about what was going on over there and going up on in New York. Keep your eye on that kind of information. Keep yourself, make yourself aware. And we'll be back again next Monday. Before we leave, we have Aaron. You want to finish us out here?
Hello. I have a couple of events for you. Thank you, Paul, for joining us. And thank you, Mike and John, for calling in. And thank you to the over 300,000 people that were in New York today or this past weekend for the Climate March. All right, your couple events are the Catfish Fry for a Cause. We'll support the Friends of the Kaw River. Enjoy a catfish dinner, a live band, an exhibit on the Kansas River Kings, and lots of fun and conversation about the Kaw. The Friends of the Kaw serves the Kansas River, known locally as the Kaw. Its mission is to advocate the rehabilitation of the Kaw and its environs, water quality, and wildlife habitat. Promote compatible public recreational use of the river, encourage the development of adequate public access, and cooperate with other individuals, organizations, and agencies as appropriate to meet these goals. The Kaw is the largest prairie watershed in the world, so they will be hosting this dinner at the Abe and Jake's on the river in Lawrence, Kansas. So to learn more about this catfish fry, please visit kansasriver.org. The Kansas City Environmental Management Commission will be holding a meeting on this Wednesday, October 8th, from 4 to 6 p.m. on 600 Broadway in Kansas City, Missouri. The Environmental Management Commission promotes environmental awareness and resource efficiency to the city's leaders and staff to assist the progress of Kansas City towards sustainability. The general public is encouraged to attend and observe meetings and to join and participate in its efforts. You can find more about this in this event on our Facebook page, Eco Radio KC. And thank you for tuning in. We'll see you next Monday at 6 p.m.
You know there's water that ripples, water that's calm. Water in a cow track festering by the pond. Tidal waves and hurricanes and whirlpools. Hot spring water, water cold and cool. And it's a water, water. World's got a whole lot of water. Water, water. Water all over the world. There's water above us, water below. Clouds full of rain and ice and snow. Aquifers below us and artesian springs. Bubbling up to fill your cup and make you want to sing about. Water, water. World's got a whole lot of water. Water, water. You know there's water all over the world. Water for fishes, water for trees. Bats and bats and grizzly bears and bumblebees. What about that farmer planting little seeds? Every living thing upon the planet needs a little water. Water. World's got a whole lot of water. 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 There's water all over the world.
Hold it. Hold it. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. The water you're about to drink deserves a second thought, I think. For Avogadro Oceans and those who follow are all involved in every swallow. The water in you is between and betwixt, and having traversed is thoroughly mixed. So someone quenching a future thirst could easily drink what you drank first. The water you're about to taste no doubt contains a bit of the waste from prehistoric beast or bird, a notion you might find absurd. The fountain spraying in the park no doubt spews bits from Joan of Arc, or Adam and Eve, and all their kin. You'd be surprised where your drink has been. Just think, the water you cannot retain will someday hence return as rain, or be beheld as the purest dew, though long ago it passed through you.
Superior and Huron and Ontario, Michigan and Erie caught up in the flow, Atlantic and Pacific, deep and blue. 60% about me and you is just water, water. World's got a whole lot of water, 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 water all over the world. There's plenty of water in the deep blue sea. That's not the kind that's good for you and me. There's precious little left that's been us to drink. That's why it's high time everybody stop to think about water, water. World's got a whole lot of water, 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 water all over the world, water all over the world.
Thanks for listening to Eco Radio KC on 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio. Están escuchando KKFI 90.1 FM Kansas City, Radio de la Comunidad.
Y traigo gozo en mí.